Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining me on this month's episode of the Cycle Podcast. On today's show, I chat with Fenella, who comes to us from the UK. We chat about a lot of different things. We talk about appendix and how maybe that was potentially endometriosis, but they thought it was her appendix. Reoccurring UTIs, birth control, self-diagnosis, pregnancy, fertility, and so much more. I'm so grateful that you're here today. Thank you for listening. I hope you're doing well. Now on to the show. Hello, everyone. Let's welcome today's guest all the way from the UK. Fenella, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Hello, I'm very well, thank you.
We're so excited to chat with you and learn a little bit more about your story and you. So why don't you just start off by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Well, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be on the podcast. It's a podcast that I found myself when I was sort of thinking that I might have endometriosis and sort of started looking uploads of things like this. So I'm Fenella. I live in the UK near Windsor. I don't actually live near Windsor, but I feel like a lot of Americans will know where Windsor is. So
Of course.
So I'm actually a jewelry designer and a silversmith. I did my silversmithing degree at university. And so I've run my jewelry and silversmithing business ever since I graduated in 2013. I love it. I'm self-employed, which I think we'll talk about a little bit later, but that really helps things. If you're sort of in control of your own timings, it can really be beneficial for people with endometriosis. That's me.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. And thank you for telling us that. And yes, Windsor, it's so funny that you say that. Just side note, I just finished season 6 of The Crown. And it's just I don't know how like really accurate that is, but it was an entertaining show, to say the least.
It was. And I heard that she's finished the very end bit where she's like walking through and she's joined by the previous queen actresses.
Yes.
I heard they did that on like the day the Queen died. They filmed it like the same day. Well, they had to or something. So it's kind of amazing. But yeah, I loved it. I don't think it's fully true. Obviously, it's not true to life. It's a bit dramatized, but I still enjoyed it. It's fun.
Yes, I did too. Well, why don't you start off by telling us a little like when you started to maybe experience something that you knew something was off or pain or, you know, was it younger? Was it when did you start to realize something was going on?
Absolutely. So I would say I first sort of started really thinking about it when I came off the pill, which is quite common, I think, for a lot of people, because up until that point, a lot of your pain is masked. But going right back, I started my period relatively late at school compared to some other people in my year group. I think I was about 13, and nearly 14 even. And for me, it did come as a bit of a shock, like it does to everyone. You know, you just wait for so long and then it's all horrible. And but I don't remember having extreme pain straight away or anything like that. I remember vividly having a period sort of every other month for the first year even, which I don't know now whether that could be a sign. I don't know whether it's too early, whether people get sort of signs straight away as soon as they start their period, or it's something that develops over time. But when I was 17, 18, I woke up one morning and I had horrendous pain. And actually, I went into A&E, so like emergency department with my mom, and I sort of described the pain as sort of like lower. It was sort of all over, but then it went lower right. And so I remember I got there really early in the morning and I was hanging around all day. And eventually, sort of at 10 at night, they said, right, we're putting you in for having an appendicectomy. So I had an appendicitis removed, I remember all day them asking me like a million questions. Could it be this? Could it be that? Are you pregnant? I'm like, no, I'm definitely not pregnant. So a bit of me thought like, I think they don't know what's wrong with me. And actually, I only thought about this incident a couple of years ago, before I had my first endometriosis-related operation, when I was doing loads of research and stuff. And I heard a story on the radio where a woman also got misdiagnosed and had her appendix out when actually it was endometriosis. But at no point in this 12-hour wait where they were asking a million questions did anyone even consider asking me about like where I was in my cycle or whether I'd had that pain before. And so only like so a couple of years ago, I put two and two together and I was like, oh my God, I think I had my appendix out. It was just like sort of because they didn't know what else was wrong with me. And I remember I woke up from that operation, and I think whether it was that day or the day after, I started my period, which now I know is really common. I get the really bad flare-ups, the pain just before starting my period. So everything was sort of starting to click in that. So yeah, I had that out at 17, eight, just before my 18th birthday. And then I went to university. As lots of people do, in like so 19, 20, I went on the pill. I was on various different pills. I didn't really get on with it, but I was on it for about four years before deciding. I just, you know, as a wise 22, 23-year-old, you are. You're like, oh, I just don't want to be on this sort of these fake hormones anymore. I just feel like, you know, I'm young. I'm supposedly healthy. Like, I don't want this flooding my body. So I came off them, and I remember it took me about a year to get back to a normal cycle. And at that point, sort of apart from the irregularity in getting back to sort of a good cycle, I don't remember any distinct pain. But sort of a year and a half, 2 years afterwards, I sort of did start getting really, you know, chronic pain, up to the point where, yeah, I started sort of thinking, I'm not sure this is normal. And that's where it starts. That's where I sort of start the going to the doctor, asking them, saying, oh, just take the paracetamol or go on contraceptives. I'm like, I don't want that. And they didn't understand, like, I don't want to be on contraceptives. Okay, yeah. But for them, like, that's the only thing they can offer you, because it's not a cure. This is what's so frustrating. It's not a cure. It just masks it. It doesn't help them out. It doesn't help me out in, you know, helping them to work out more about endometriosis. They just mask it and send you on your way. And I was really adamant I didn't want to go back on the pill, because, you know, it didn't work very well for me. I didn't like the idea of the implant or the IUD. I just did, you know, I knew that I wanted to sort of let my body be its own thing, but at the same time, it was really hurting me. So it's just really frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I want to go back to high school and just any other symptoms that now you remember when you recall that. But just touching on the birth control thing, it's so interesting that you say that, like, that you didn't want to be on it and you didn't want to do, you know, the ring or it's very similar. I know for me personally, I tried multiple different ones, but I didn't tolerate it well. And a lot of people with endo I talk to don't tolerate it well. And it's probably because this is an estrogen dominant disease and they're giving you these synthetic hormones and our bodies are like, what is going on? So not only does it mask it, for me, I felt worse. Yes, my period was lighter. Okay, great.
Yeah.
But I still had a lot of pain. I still had bowel symptoms and I still felt.
Yeah.
Not only did I not feel well, having the birth control like almost took it to the next level of not feeling well, because then like my mental health wasn't well.
Oh,
like
yeah.
I was more sad all the time. And I was just like, what is going on here? So
yeah.
And I totally do, like you said, like that's the thing that they offer. Like this is what you can have, you know, and it's not the solution. I mean, it does help some people and that's wonderful, but it's not the End game.
Yeah. And I think once you've been on contraceptive pills or whatever for a certain period, and you decide to come off them, you're then so reluctant to come off to go back on them, because you know what, like sometimes when you're in the midst of it and you're on the pill and you're on the pill for years and years, until you come off it, you don't realize, you actually don't realize yourself how it's affecting your mental health, how it's affecting you, how it's affecting like how you react to things. So,
Yeah.
but then once you come off and you're like, oh my God, I thought I was okay, but I clearly wasn't, because now I feel much better. You then don't want to go back on that. So I noticed that in me, and that's why I was so reluctant to go back on them, even though I knew that, oh, it might help the endometriosis, it might help the pain. The other bits, I wasn't willing to go back on them for that.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that 100%. I was in the very similar boat where I was like, I'm not taking this ever again.
Yeah, really, really rough. So then, where were we? I'd come off the
So high
pill.
school, just really quick, like when you think back to like high school in the beginning of uni, were there any other symptoms? Like, did you have migraines? It now that you reflect back, because I know for me, when I reflect back, I'm like, oh my goodness, I had migraines, I had like bowel pain, like all of these things that I didn't know were related when I was younger in the
Absolutely. So
off
the
times.
So the bowel pain, the bowel just issues in general, looking back, it explains a lot. But again, because it's your own body and you don't know anything else, for so long I was like, well, this is just normal. This is just normal. This is normal for me. So, the either constant constipation or diarrhea, there was no sort of in between that normal for me. And that is still ongoing, but now I can realize what it is. Now I know it's part of the endometriosis, and know it's part of all of that. And during my laparoscopy, they found endo on my bowel, and so it does explain it. But yeah, other than that, I've always been very tired, occasional headaches, but I wouldn't describe them as migraines. But again, it's so hard to sort of look back. In the last sort of 10 years, I can do think back more, but teenage wise, it's hard. I mean, you have so much other stuff going on as well. You kind of just, it's so crazy anyway that you kind of, it's hard to remember your periods then. But again, you're just getting used to them yourself. So, you're trying to work out what is normal for you. And also people just didn't talk about it. I've got two older sisters, and we hardly spoke about them between us at all. And in fact, it wasn't until I was getting really, really chronic pain after coming off my periods. I remember I was in London one day, and I had a complete like flare up. Luckily, I was in a building that I knew quite well, but I was, oh my God, it was awful. I was like sort of in the basement in the bathroom area. There's no signal down there because it's underground.
Right,
It was
oh gosh.
absolutely, this is one that sort of really in my mind. It was awful. I was sort of there. Luckily, there was sort of like a powder room with like some sofas and stuff. I was there, so I'd t you know, you take your shoes off, I'd like loosen my trousers. Like I was just literally in agony. And I had my phone, but obviously no signal. I knew loads of people upstairs. I was like, what am I gonna do? Because this was one of the first really bad ones. Whereas now, you get kind of get used to it, and I say to myself now, I'm like, this will pass, this will go, it's not gonna be forever. But back then I was really, really quite panicked. And I remember a couple of Greek ladies came in and they saw me and they're like, are you okay? I was like, do you have any pain relief at all? Like, do you have anything? And they were like, yeah, I've got these random Greek things. Well, I don't care, just give them to me, like whatever it is.
I'll take it. I'll take it.
I'm taking it. And then, half an hour, 40 minutes passed, and I was in a state that where I could stand up and get going to where I was meeting my sisters. And I got there, and it was a party for my cousin, and I got there, and I was like, oh my God, this thing just happened to me. This is just horrendous. And both my sisters were like, oh yeah, I have that. How do we not talk about, how we, I'm at this point, I'm sort of, 23, 24. How are we not talking about this? And it's And I don't know whether it's like a generational thing or people, I mean, even in the last 5 years, the talk about mental health has got improved so much, but just talking about, you know, women's health, just don't do it. So that blew my mind.
Yeah, there's like shame around it. I always say, like, I remember I just assumed all of my friends behind closed doors were rocking back and forth and almost passing out every month. I just thought nobody talked about it, you know? And
yeah,
like you said, I do think there's more talk about it now, but there's so much shame around all of it.
So that was quite bad. And then I went to the doctor, and they do the whole go on contraception, or they gave me methylamic acid, which I think a few people have spoken about on your podcast. I can never pronounce it very well, but some people it helps, some people it doesn't help. And that's the thing with endometriosis. I think you have to, it's frustrating, but you have to try out so many different things to work out what is good for you. And for me, it does take the edge off it. So I'm happy with that. Whether it's a psychological thing, whether it's the drug actually, you know, doing something, it doesn't matter in a way, because I know that for me it does help. And I have to make sure I have that on me at all times. You know, because the thought of dealing with that pain without that at hand is just not worth it now. I know that it works for me, so that's great. It's sort of like a safety net. It takes the edge off. It gives me that sort of, you know, protection, relief from the most severe pain. So the GP, the doctor, they sent me away with that. It seemed to work a bit, so I left it for another couple of years. And then the pandemic. And I think everything to do with endometriosis, like we always talk about on here, it's not just, people think it's just like a womb or uterus thing. It's not. It's like whole body. It's a whole body thing. And the stress, whatever that word is.
Exacerbates it. Yeah, it exacerbates it 100%. Yes.
And so for me, although initially felt quite, you know, novel and like, ooh, isn't this nice having some time off and the sun is shining and all the rest of it. But actually on the other side, my business side, all of my shows were cancelled. I didn't know, there was nothing in the future for me to be thinking about. I got a part-time job back at a supermarket I used to work at when I was younger, which thankfully was, you know, saving grace. It was amazing to have something to do. But I think the underlying stress of everything just really got to me. And like so many other people, I have recurring UTI infections all the time. And that's something that sort of is hard to talk about as well, because so many people just, you know, without the knowledge, just think, oh, it's a sort of sexual related thing. And it's like, it's not though. It is not. Like, I get these all the time. Like, whether I've had sex or not had sex, I'm getting a UTI. And it's just so frustrating, because again, you have that sort of stigma attached to this, which shouldn't be. So I used to get them all the time, and at no point did a doctor sort of put two and two together. And I'd be on antibiotics, and then I'd get so used to these antibiotics, I had to change the antibiotics. So yeah, during the pandemic, I got a UTI, I was really stressed. My mental health massively dipped. First time in my life, I went on antidepressants, had CBT, which helped. And then, yeah, I had this massive, massive flare-up. It was a bit later, it was May 2021. And so we were back in a lockdown essentially the following year. And it was awful. I remember it being, well, it must have been the worst I've ever had it, because I ended up ringing 111, which is like our sort of one down from like 911. You call 111 if you've got like a sort of medical emergency. And I remember, and you ring them, and they have, obviously it's just general. They have to sort of narrow it down to what you're there asking for. And I had to, you know, you have to be on the phone for like 5 minutes asking all these random questions to get to the point. And I remember I could hardly even answer these questions because I was just in so much pain. I remember like on all fours, leaning against the sofa downstairs. I'm in so much pain. I could hardly speak, but I knew I had some. Like I'd sort of hit a point where I was like, I can't take this anymore. I need someone to be taking me seriously. And for me, that meant I'd know ringing 111, getting like a second opinion that's not my doctor's. And so after I answered all these million questions, they go, okay, we're going to call you an ambulance. And I'm like, no, I'd look, that's very kind of you, but we're in the middle of a pandemic. There are people who genuinely need ambulances. I don't need one. It's horrible, but I'm used to this. I just want someone to start taking me seriously. I don't need an ambulance. I know that this is awful right now, but I know in an hour or two, hopefully less, that it will be gone. But I need you to write a note to my doctor to say this is not okay and that you need to refer me for further investigations. So they were like, okay, fine, if you feel like way, da da da. I was like, absolutely, you know, I don't need, you know, there's people out there who actually need an ambulance. I'm not one of them. So I put the phone down and a few weeks later, I think, I rang my doctor to be like, have you had a note from, you know, the people at 111? And I rang them a couple of weeks ago saying this, that, and the other. And I will honestly, I will never forget this conversation I had with this doctor because I said, you know, I had this really bad experience and, you know, I really want to be referred. I I've come to you for 3-4 years now. It's not, I know something's not right. I would like to be referred. And this doctor goes, well, we can't refer every woman in the country.
Mm-mm. No.
Okay, but first of all, I'm not asking you to refer every woman in the country. Not every woman is asking.
Yeah.
Not every woman even wants to be referred, but you should definitely be taking seriously the people who are asking. You know, we're not making this up. You've got it on my record that I've been in pain for several years. You know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist. And also, what's frustrating is, what is it to you whether I get referred or not? Like, it's not like you have to pay to refer me. Like, just
all
refer
you have to
me.
Do is write something, right? Yeah. Like, just to...
literally.
So this how woman, patronizing. Patronizing.
Honestly. But then she was like, "Okay, I will," but you know, because of the pandemic, you're not going to hear for 2 or 3 or 4 months. I was like, I don't care. I don't care if it's 6 months because 3 months in the course of 5-6 years is nothing to me.
Right.
I don't, as long as I'm in the system, you know, I'll wait. I don't mind waiting. It was unbelievable. I honestly, I couldn't believe it when she said that.
It's awful. And it's a woman doctor too. Like just dismissing you and not taking you seriously.
Mm-hmm. It's awful.
And at this point, you still don't know you have endo.
Oh, yeah. So at this point, I absolutely don't know. And but I sort of started to suspect, you know, with the pain and everything, I think from sort of age 26 onwards, I sort of started thinking, or even thinking about family, I was like, I have this feeling that it's going to be difficult for me to have children. I just, in something told me, I was like, this is not okay. I just suddenly, and I sort of started reading around it or reading people in similar situations. And actually it was my husband listens to a podcast. I don't know if you can get it over there. It's called How Do You Cope? And these two, have you heard of it?
I haven't, but I will look into it for sure.
No, definitely look it up. I think there's sort of
I will.
3 or 4 series in now, but they interview people who've been through whether it's illnesses or trauma or difficult things in their lives to overcome. And there was a woman being interviewed who suffers from endometriosis and adenomyosis, and she's called Emma Barnett, and she actually is the radio presenter of Women's Hour here on Radio 4, which is a really good program. And my husband listened to that, and I listened to the odd episode. I wasn't that into this podcast at that point, but he listened to it, and then I listened to it, and he was like, I think you have this. And I was like, yeah, I think this sounds, there's a description of the pain was just so similar, so similar. And I think whether it's her who describes it like this, or I've heard it somewhere else, but the pain, and it's so hard to describe, but it is literally like a heavy chain is strangling your insides. And it's, and so much that, like, you can't, as if someone's strangling you here and you can't breathe. It's like someone's strangling you there, but you still can't breathe. And so I listened to this podcast and I was like, I think this is it. Yeah, it was kind of like that light bulb moment for me, that one.
I got chills when you told me that your husband listened to it and came to you and said, I think this is what you have.
Yeah.
It's incredible that, was this in 2021 or 2022, that in 2020, in the 2020s, that you still weren't told that by anyone, and you basically self-diagnosed yourself via podcast.
Yeah, exactly. It's awful. And that must have been about 2020. But it's so frustrating because so many people have to self-diagnose, because so many of the symptoms come up as other things. You know, it's never anyone's first port of call is never endometriosis. You know, so many people on this podcast have said similar things. So many of the symptoms can mask as other things, other problems, other, you know, GI problems, anything. So that's why it's hardly ever diagnosed. I mean, it took me 7-8 years to be diagnosed. And we've had people on this podcast who've had even more than that.
I really think, like, GI doctors need to be educated about it, because most people are going for GI, and family doctors. Like, your family doctor is your first, or your PCP or whatever, is your first line of defense. That's the first person you're going to and saying something's wrong. How do they not know the word, or even to suspect this, if you're saying, I have pain during my cycle, I have bowel issues, or I have migraines, or whatever symptom you may have present first. For me, I had the pain, but I thought it was normal. So GI is how I started, like, going down the path, and had, like, all the GI tests, and no GI doctor ever said anything to me about endometriosis.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Yeah. So, I mean, okay. So you got the referral. What happened then?
So I got the referral. I got the referral, and I was sent for ultrasound scan in, I think, October 2021, I think. Oh, the timeline, as we've spoken, it's just such, it blurs, you know, at the time and everything. So I think 2021, October, I had the ultrasound scan. They saw various cysts that they sort of could tell were sort of endometriomas on both ovaries. But then my consultant, quickly having seen that, wanted a follow-up MRI scan. So I thought, oh my God, great, we're getting somewhere.
Yeah.
This is super quick. And, you know, having had the really long wait, well, relatively long wait for the first scan, I thought, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to have an MRI scan for months. And also in the papers at the time with the pandemic, you heard about the waiting lists going up and up and up, and people were waiting 2 years for any kind of gynae appointment, let alone surgery. So there was all this going on at the same time. And I discussed with my husband, you know, do we, you know, can we afford, do we look at going privately if needs must and all the rest of it. So, you know, I was like waiting for this MRI scan. I was like, right, I'm fully expecting 6 month wait. Literally the next week, they were like, we've booked you for an MRI scan.
Wow.
So I know, I was shocked. So this woman rings me in, I'm like, I was like, when can you do it? I was like, well, when can you do it?
Yeah, I'm on your schedule. You tell me.
I'm totally flexible. So they were like, yeah, they're like, okay, next Thursday. I'm like, oh my God, yeah. So, yeah, went for this MRI scan, which, I don't know, do you guys get MRIs for this kind of thing quite often in the US? Yeah?
Yeah, we do.
So, my first MRI scan, I didn't quite know what to expect. It was long. I was in there for about the best part of 50 minutes, I'd say.
Yeah. And it's loud.
Although, my sister gave me some quite good advice, which was wear an eye mask. And I think they do give you music, because there's always that temptation to like open your eye and have a look.
Yes.
But with an eye mask on, I was just like zen, you know, in the zone. Right. It's fine. And they give you some music to listen to or whatever. Mm-hmm. Not that it's particularly interesting, but it's still something over the loud clunking.
Yes.
And then they also injected me with this contrast. Mm-hmm. So it shows up more clearly, like organs and things, and they can see what's going on. And that was quite a shock because I didn't really know what to expect. They were saying, you know, it's going to be cold, it'll feel like cold, and that we'll tell you when it's going in and all the rest of it. So they told me, and they're like, okay, it's going in now. And I was like, oh, it's okay. And then, but then suddenly, it was like, deep freeze had been like injected into my veins, and it was insane. It just went boom, and it's like everywhere. Oh my gosh, it was horrible.
I remember that. Something like this, and it's like, don't freak out, stay calm, don't freak out, like, because it's scary. It is scary. I'm glad you brought it up, because people have had it done. I've had it a CAT scan too, and it's hot. They tell you feel like your pants. Yeah.
So my sister had that one, and my sister had a CT scan and mentioned the whole feeling the need to wee. So I was worried about that. And then suddenly that didn't happen, but I had like deep freeze in my veins.
Oh,
I
was
like,
my gosh.
What is this?
Yeah.
Oh my God. But yeah, it's important to talk about that, because if people don't know what they're going in for.
It is, and but, it is, it's quite scary if you've never been through it. It's scary when you've been through it. Your whole body, it's crazy.
It was the delay was what took me by surprise, because they were like, okay, it's going in now. And for you to 10 seconds, it was like, oh, that was nothing. And then, whoa. But yeah, it was fine. So then, oh my gosh, okay, so I had the MRI, I was like, great, we're getting somewhere here. I feel like I'm being listened to, you know. So that was, I think, December I had the MRI. And they were like, well, it might take a few weeks to get results, because obviously Christmas, New Year, blah, blah, blah. I was like, fine. Like end of January, I still like hadn't heard. And a bit of me was like, oh, okay. And then sort of mid-February, I still hadn't heard anything. It was like the end of February.
Anything.
But and a bit of me was like, well, fine, that's fine, because obviously I'm not dying, because if I was dying, they would have told me.
They would have rang you.
Yeah, if there was something seriously wrong with me in there, they would have contacted me by now. But at the same time, you're waiting, and you just want to know. You want to be able to get on with your life. You want to be able to plan your life. You want to know what the plan is, the plan of action. So that was really hard. In March, I started ringing. I was like, right, what's going on here? I'm ringing the hospital. I'm ringing the consultant secretary. I can't get through. I'm leaving daily voicemails with the secretary.
Good for you.
This woman must absolutely love me, honestly. So I'm ringing the hospital, I'm ringing like all the different sort of departments I can think of that like remotely related to what we're dealing with. And then, because obviously everything's like an automated system and stuff. Yeah. And this one time I'm like literally losing my mind. I'm like, I just want to speak to someone. I want to know what the plan is. and I get hold, there's an option for like endometriosis nurse. So I'm like, yeah, whatever, I'll pick this. So I speak to this really lovely woman called Janelle, and she is like, what's the matter? Da, 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 da. I'm like, look, I'm waiting for results. I just want to know what I'm looking at. Why haven't I not heard? What the plan is? Like, there's zero communication. And she was really helpful. She sort of looked at my note. She said, yes, we are aware. Like, you should have received whatever, but da, 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 da. And then obviously the next day I get a letter saying what the deal is, what they found. But what is good is that my consultant had already pre-scan had put me on the waiting list for a laparoscopy. So that was good. At least like that was done, you know. But why wasn't I told that? You know, I had to find it. Anyway. So I got a letter through saying, yep, there were endometriomas, typical with, you know, endometriosis, and I had a blocked or something they could see in my tube, in one of my tubes, mm-hmm. which possibly would mean it having to come out at surgery and all the rest of it. And basically that's the last I hear until they ring me to say when I can have an operation. Wow. So and at this point, you know, this is sort of March time, I'm like, God, it's going to be ages and ages. And that's where we discuss, like, look, if it's going to be 2 years, I can't afford to be waiting 2 years for this. I want to get on with my life. If we want children, we need to sort that out, all the rest of it. So we talked about it and we said, you know, let's see what they say, see what the waiting list is like, and then, you know, we'll plan for that. Luckily, I managed to get in through persistence, I think, because again, you've got to keep on these people. I think too many people sit back and just wait to hear. You've got to be proactive.
Yeah.
You've got to get on them and ring them. It might be annoying, but actually, it's your health. You've got to look after number one. You've got to make sure that you're on it. And don't feel bad about maybe being annoying or whatever.
Yeah. You're not being annoying. You're fighting for yourself. You have to do it. It's very challenging, but you have to do it.
Yeah. It's really challenging. And actually, it's even more challenging when you have doctors like I had being like, well, I'm very surprised. You have to, it shouldn't be as hard. It shouldn't be this hard, but you have to advocate for yourself. You have to trust yourself. Yeah. You know your body more than the doctor knows your body, whether they might be more qualified than you. But you know your body.
Yes. And you know when something's not right and things are kind of deteriorating. I'm sure in this time when you were waiting too, how were you feeling? Were things getting worse? Were you just like, of course, because like you were like,
I'm so glad you brought that.
Yeah, you have endo.
Because
now
the
you
mental
know.
Health. Yeah. So the mental health is did deteriorate quite a lot. And the wait, you're right, the waiting is awful. And actually, I mean, obviously I was so thrilled, but at the same time as me waiting, my older sister told us she was having a baby, which was, as you can imagine, mixed feelings.
Yes, yes.
Because here I am, like, waiting to find out ultimately if there's something wrong with me down there or whether I'm gonna have to have a tube out or whatever. And then my sister's like, I'm having a baby. So obviously it was amazing and he's absolutely gorgeous, but at the time it really oh my God, it hit me like it was awful. It was bad, but thank God, you know, I was at least on antidepressants at that point, because I think had I not been, it would have been so much worse. So and you know, I got support from my doctor in that instance, and they did help me through a lot of that. And but yeah, the waiting is just awful, 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 awful. But yes, May, I had my operation at the end of May in 2021. But like I said, you don't really get any sort of contact with your consultant before, like right before your operation. And so I'm waiting for my operation, And he comes in with loads of stuff to sign and, you know, all the rest of it. And he says, you know, from the MRI, you know, it looks like one of your tubes is deceased. We might have to remove that. So, like, blasé, you know, like, oh, yeah. It's deceased. It's your tube's deceased. We're going to take it.
You're like, cool. Thanks for telling me that right before we're about to go into surgery, you know, like.
Oh, it gets better. Gosh. So then he's like, yeah, so one of your tubes is diseased. We might have to take that. But if the other one also looks diseased, are you okay with us taking that one? Because obviously that means you'd have to do IVF. It wouldn't be a possibility of you having children. Like, I'm just like, how are you telling me this right before I'm having surgery? But also, a bit of the practical side of me was like, well, of course, if it's deceased, why would I keep it? Like, you know.
But to, like, just get the information right before you go in. That's a lot to take in. You're probably already a nervous wreck because you're about to have surgery.
Though, because then he's like, and you know, after your operation, we're going to give you 6 months of induced menopause. Okay. And that will consist of monthly injections for 6 months and daily HRT. To help, like, just a low dose to help with your bones and stuff. So obviously they can't give you a high dose because then it's sort of just completely counteracts what they're trying to do. So I had 6 months of Zoladex injections, which, do you call it something different in the US?
No, it's called the same thing.
It here. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think as far as I know, they use it to treat like some breast cancers and prostate cancer. It's basically. Yes. It reduces how quickly cells reproduce, basically. And supposedly in endometriosis, it sort of slows all that down and therefore prolongs how successful your surgery is, supposedly. But having been through that, I can tell you now, if I ever have to have another surgery, I will not be doing that because that was the worst I've ever felt in my life. The 6 months of this induced menopause, just there's just so much wrong with it, and I just don't even know how beneficial it was, really. And actually this is how bad it was. I would take the pain of endometriosis over the million other symptoms I got through the induced menopause, like, any day. I just can't begin. And I'm now such an advocate of talking about menopause as well as endometriosis. Mm-hmm. It's unreal. Like, people just don't talk about it. You don't talk about it. You don't learn about it. It's awful. From the night sweats to the aching legs, brain fog, like, you would not believe. I mean, I have a pretty bad memory anyway, but this was next level. I'd write something in my diary for the next day and completely forget it. I'd look at it and forget it. Like, there was nothing that could help me. It was awful. I felt like I was losing my mind. I like looked in the mirror and I literally couldn't recognize myself. You feel like you just don't feel like you. You literally don't feel like you. You can't describe it. It's unbelievable.
I've heard similar, I've never done that, but I've heard similar accounts, very like to what you're saying, where it was very, very more challenging than having the pain.
Absolutely. And like I said, I don't know how, and you never, I guess it's one of these things you just never find out. Unless I have another operation and don't have it, I don't have anything to compare it to, but I just don't know how beneficial that was in terms of the endometriosis. Because in terms of my mental health, it absolutely did not help at all. It plummeted. I've never felt so awful in my life. It was really, bear in mind, I was already on some antidepressants, but had I not been, you know, and I think my dose got slightly upped during that period, but had I not been on anything, I can't even think about it.
So how did you feel once you came off of that, like surgery recovery, and like how are
Yeah.
things going now?
Yeah. So then I was on that sort of June to November, came off it, and then you have a sort of consultation with your consultant to say like what the next steps are. So we both went along. Me and my husband went to this meeting with my consultant, where it was basically, you can't leave your body as it is. Either go on contraception or try for a baby. Those were my two options.
Which are like
And
old myths. Both of those are old
yeah.
myths.
So
Oh.
just really horrible because obviously, like, I don't want to go on the pill like before. I just don't have any interest in sort of synthetic hormones. And I'm not ready to have a baby. I don't feel like I'm ready to have a baby at this point. So I say to him, I'm like, oh, okay. So, and there is another option which I hadn't tried, and at this point I was a bit more open to the coil without the hormones. I don't can't remember which one that is, but he was like, you could try that. So those are my options. I was like, okay, well maybe I'll try that. And then I was like, oh, you know, oh, so could I have the coil for a bit and then maybe take it out when ready to try for a baby? And you will absolutely love this.
Oh no. Oh
He was
gosh.
like, he goes, at this point I'm like a week away from my 32nd birthday, so I'm like 31. And he goes, Fenella, you're 31. You have severe endometriosis. If you want to have a baby, you need to have a baby now.
I just infuriated. Like I can't
Know.
with this
I
individual.
know.
What did you do?
Absolutely.
Oh, I mean, did you leave there crying or did you like scream in his face? I mean, I
Was
can't.
just a bit confused. I was just like, oh, okay. I didn't really have that as a plan, but okay, maybe I need to think about it. And you know, we've been married for 2 years at that point. We always spoke that maybe, you know, we did want children at some point. Like, you know, may as well, I don't know, try now. So yeah, that's November. I had a brief freak out where obviously if you have this induced menopause, there is a small chance your body just goes into menopause.
Sure.
And when I came off the monthly injections, I had an awful long time until my period came again. Which, you know, so long that I was ringing the doctor again, being like, can you check my hormone levels because I don't have my period yet. And before I could speak, she's like, oh, you're pregnant. I'm like, oh my God,
Oh my
no,
gosh.
I'm not pregnant. I literally don't think I can be pregnant, but thanks for telling me that. So I'm like, no, have you actually seen my notes before, like, obviously I'm not pregnant. I've just been on the menopause. I only want to find out whether I've actually gone into menopause full time or just to give me some peace of mind. Anyway, luckily my period came like the next week, so it's fine. But oh my God, all these little things
Well, and
that
those are like they're telling you myths from like 20 years ago. Like these things are not true.
oh my gosh. So yeah, then period started and it was fine, and we decided then, like, you know, yeah, let's, you know, we'll try for a baby, we'll see how it goes. And in the UK, they give you 12 months of trying for a baby before they sort of see you for infertility clinic and stuff. But because I have endometriosis, the consultant says, look, we'll see you in 6 months. Obviously, if you're pregnant in that time, we won't see you. But if you're not pregnant, come back and we'll, you know, look into it more. So, yeah, I was not pregnant. After 6 months, went back in June last year, where they, and this is where it's so annoying because they're like, okay, well, we'll do this high cozy. Do you have that?
I'm not sure what
That
that
is a
is.
shortened, it's where they test to see if your tubes are blocked.
Got and did they leave your tubes or did they take one? What happened in the
Oh, so
surgery?
sorry. They did actually. They went in and they said the tubes were actually okay, so they just flushed the tubes through.
Great.
So
Okay,
that
good.
was fine. Actually, that reminds me, it's so funny because when I woke up from my surgery, and I woke up like in theater still,
Oh no.
in theater. No,
No.
that was planned. I think that's like that's okay. That
Okay.
was planned. Although I've not heard of that before, but anyway, I was still there. And the first thing I said, sort of when I was still sort of like couldn't even really speak properly, I was like, "Do I have both my tubes? Do I have both my
Oh,
tubes? Do I have both my
gosh.
tubes?"
Poor
And
thing.
this little nurse, she was so sweet. She was like, "Ah," she obviously had no idea what was going on. She's like, "Ah, I don't. Let me just go check for you. Let me just go check." And she came back. She was like, "You have both your tubes. You have both
Oh.
your tubes." So yeah, what they did in the they obviously found endometriosis in there. They found all my bowel. They found it. They had big endometriomas, which they tried to drain, but they then burst when they were draining them. So that was a little bit more complicated, but
Yeah.
essentially woke up having been diagnosed with endometriosis.
Yes.
But yeah, I have both tubes. I have both
Okay.
ovaries currently. But having not been got pregnant, they were like, right, we'll your tubes are blocked, because you know things happen. Like with the when I got to the operation, the tube was fine, whereas 6 months before it had been, so things change on their own naturally. So but at this point they were like, okay, well, we'll check now to see if your tubes are clear or blocked. So I have this is so funny, the story. So this height, so they go up, they put a sort of catheter up for you and a balloon that blows up your cervix. And then they insert dye, which they can then see. And if your tubes are clear, they'll obviously see the dye coming out of the ends of the tubes. And obviously, like a lot of procedures done there, I want to be clued up in like what am I expecting? What kind of, you know, what kind of pain am I looking at here? And my husband was in on this room as well, and the doctor was really great, really lovely. And I said, you know, and he was really, you know, told me what was going to happen. I was like, fine. And the two nurses were there, and they said, you know, people, when the dye goes in, people do experience like instant cramping. So I was like, okay, you know, knowing
Gosh.
what I know about pain, I was like, okay, so I can prepare myself. And oh my God, this is so I'm on the bed, the doctor's like putting the catheter up me, whatever, and then he's like, okay, so we're gonna put the dye in now. And it's like I felt like nothing. I was like,
Like, this is the
this
easiest thing I've ever
what?
done.
I was like, honestly, I was like joking around with the doctor because I was just like, that is that it? And he said something to make me laugh. I was like, oh God, don't make me laugh, because I just imagine this thing just like flying out of me. Don't make me laugh, don't make me laugh. But yeah, the pain was like, obviously, it was like absolutely nothing compared to what I and so many other people are used to. That I was like, I couldn't believe it. I got off the bed after the thing, and my tubes were clear, by the way. Then I was like, I can't believe people are like complain about that. And the nurse was like, oh God, some people like scream. Some people like we have to
Oh.
stop the procedure.
You're like, well, I have a very high pain tolerance because I have endometriosis.
Yeah, literally, I was like, wow. I was like, wow. So yeah, so I had that procedure. Cozy. It's actually that high cozy is shortened to something that's like so long I wouldn't even attempt to pronounce it, but that's
I
what
know
we
there
call
has
it over
probably a
here.
different name here. I know of the procedure, but I don't know what it's called. Yeah.
So I had that, and the tubes were clear, which was a relief. But also, like, weirdly, at the same time, it was kind of a oh, because you kind of think, well, if they're blocked, that's it, that's the answer.
Right.
Whereas it was like they're clear, and you're like, well, I don't really know what else can be going on here then.
Yeah.
So yeah, and at that point, this is so classic as well. The doctor's like, okay, well, you know, we'll do a test on your husband's sperm just to rule it out, just to rule it out, because clearly the problem lies with you. But we'll do it just to rule it out.
Of course. Of course. That's how they talk.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's where we're at now, really, because the problem wasn't with me as such, or one of the problems wasn't with me. So that is really where we're at now. We are discussing whether we want to do go down the IVF route. For me, what's difficult is, again, the messing with your body, and especially after the induced menopause, I'm really, really reluctant to do anything else to my body that is not really required, you know. So for me, it's something to think about still, but I think what's frustrating is that I think had I not had that induced menopause, I would probably be more up for it, but because of that and what I know I was like and the strain it put on my mental health, I just don't, and the stories you hear about IVF and everything, and I'm not sure I want to do that to myself at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot to think about and process if it is what you want to do, you know. How are you feeling pain-wise?
Pain-wise, frustratingly, in the last few months, it has come back a bit. Again, recurring UTIs. I had one for such a long time. I was sent to another ultrasound scan where my cysts had reappeared, similar in size to what I had pre-op. So it's just a case of waiting to see what happens next now, which I need to find out, because it's complicated now that it's combined with infertility.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know whether I'm with the one guy for everything, or I have separate guy for infertility and endometriosis. I think they've combined them so that the consultant I have for infertility knows more about endometriosis. But it's just, yeah, I feel kind of like, unfortunately, I'm sort of almost back at stage one now.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of the waiting to see.
I'm sorry. To interrupt, was your consultant like an endo specialist? Like, did they do excision surgery, do you know? Or do you know what type of procedure they did to remove the lesions?
They did excision.
Good.
On certain bits. Again, but they said to me at the end, they weren't sure whether they got everything.
Yeah.
And all that, and you know, it seems to just grow back no matter whether you get everything or not.
I know.
In some cases. So and I remember at the time, because my husband was asking, you know, how long do you have until it comes back, and everyone's so different. He saw like a 21-year-old and it came back fully within 6 months, and then someone else, you know, might be a couple of years. It just so depends on the individual.
Yeah.
Which again is just frustrating for everyone, but I do feel like, unfortunately, you know, over the last 3-4 months, I have been having increasing pain, not to the level that it was before, but
sure,
still that you know something's not quite right, which is again frustrating, because then you're in this cycle of, well, now that I know I've got these endometriomas, do I need another surgery before IVF? Because obviously with the IVF, you're then pumped with estrogen, which is not good for your endo.
Right.
And all the rest of it. So,
it's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot to deal with and think through, and you know, making sure you're taking care of yourself too. So yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, thinking through this, or you know, just thinking back and actually like talking this all out. Is there anything that you like advice? I know you've given some advice, but any tips or advice or things that really worked well for you? Or obviously we know the menopause drug is probably something you're not going to put on your list, but was there anything else that you've noticed that really helped, or tips for the listeners?
Absolutely. So for me, when I came off the pill all those years ago, I think I was probably one of the first adopters of those cycle tracking apps. And for me, that has been so beneficial in so many different periods of my life. it's been used. So initially, obviously, I just used it to literally track when my periods were getting back on track after coming off contraception, and you could see the sort of what's the word I'm looking for? You can see the patterns, and you can see like what you know whether you know how you're doing, and then and now it's sort of you can put so much more information in there. And actually, that is really, really useful for you to then look back on, to go to your doctors and say, okay, I had pain here, here, here. I had gastro issues at this time of the month. It's just really useful to see all of that data. And I know some people are like struggle with the whole data privacy thing, but I think now you can set sort of, you can, you know, you can have privacy settings and things. But for me, that is so useful because it is hard. It's hard to keep track. And actually, the more you track, the more you get to know your body. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, really understanding, getting to understand my cycle. And I'm reading a book at the moment, actually, about sort of the nervous system. And it's this really interesting bit about just when you can learn to sort of not fight it, just kind of like, go with it, because you know it, you know the pain, you know it's going to end. It's not going to, well, for a lot of people it's not like that, but you know at some point it's not going to last forever. And just trying to float past the pain instead of fight it, because sometimes I think the fighting of it and the fear makes it that much worse. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you can start to know your body, know your cycle, sort of preempt the pain, know when the pain's coming, it sort of, it does help you, it helps sort of ease that initial like shock and makes you not like frustrated and fighting it, and everything tenses up even more. Whereas if you know when it's coming, you can do certain things to help you. So I think I mentioned in our pre-recording chat about me being self-employed. Mm-hmm. And how I didn't really realize that how useful that has been to me, because you know I don't have to go to work at 9 a.m. every Monday, and so it allows me to look at my cycle and be like, okay, I'm not going to be productive this week, I know I'm not going to be productive in the workshop this week, so I'm going to stay at home, I'm going to keep warm, I'm going to have hot water bottles, drink loads of tea, and do a little bit of admin, because that's all I can do this week. It's sort of by tracking your cycle, that's the first call I would say, and then adding other details, like I add bowel movements to my app, I add discharge to my app, I add whether I've got UTI or whether I've got like various appointments coming up. I track it all in this app now, and it means that over time you can see and you can look at patterns that are appearing. Mm-hmm. So that you can be so you can sort of prepare yourself and just be ready for what you know is coming.
I think that's fantastic. It really is fantastic advice. And people have heard me talk about it. I try to track as much as possible. It really does help you prepare as much as you can.
Yeah.
You know, then sometimes things might not go exactly according to that cyclical schedule, but it does, the data helps. And I do think it helps when you go to your doctor and you say, here's all the things and here's the dates, and I'm not just making it up. And no, you shouldn't have to do that. But having the data, it does help to have the data. So yeah, I think that's fantastic advice for sure.
Absolutely. It really does. But there's so many great, you know, including this one, so many great podcasts out there, so many great things about just the menstrual cycle in general. And I just think cluing yourself up on these things, giving yourself as much knowledge as you can on everything is just so helpful. There's a really good, I don't know if you get BBC Sounds with you, but there's a really good podcast my friend introduced me to called 28 Days Later. I actually think it might be in America. I can't remember. Anyway, it's called 28 Days Later, and it goes through every day and what's happening to your hormones and your body in that each day of your cycle. But yeah, I think over time, and it's easy for me now here as a 33-year-old to say, you know your body. But actually, when you're like 17, 18, you don't know your own body. But take that time to understand it, listen to it. Like, you know your body more than the doctors. If you think something is wrong, you have to get that across. Don't just be, you know, have the door shut on you. Like, advocate for yourself. You know something's wrong. You've got to do something about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's beautiful advice, for sure. Is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
I don't think so. Just that, just thank you so much for doing this podcast and opening me up to other people who are suffering from the same thing. And if it can help one person, it's a great thing.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing so much helpful information and just the details of your story. We really appreciate it. And thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Cycle Podcast. Don't forget to rate us in Google or Spotify. If you would like to give us a 5-star rating, we would really appreciate that. And also just really wanted to say thank you again for your time and listening to the endo stories to help build awareness, get more recognition for this disease. And I know all of the patients that have shared their story really appreciate you being here. With that being said, I always have to have my medical disclaimer. This podcast is not intended for the purpose of providing medical advice. All information, content, and material of this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to serve or substitute for the consultation, diagnosis, and/or medical treatment of a qualified physician or healthcare provider. Thank you so much for understanding this medical disclaimer, and I'm wishing you a pain-free day. Take care.